Listening to sermons as we go about our days, driving around or doing our work, is a perfect reminder of our Lord's promises and of His mercies. This is the mission of Upper Room Media: to make the Word of God accessible to anybody and everybody.
So I didn't really know what they wanted me to talk about. Fasting big deals. They didn't really give me much direction actually at all. But they told me to go through the book of Daniel, so here I am. But before we begin and look at that, I think that my perspective anyway is that, and this is not judgment by any means, because I'm speaking to myself and I've come to this conclusion from observing my own pattern of fasting, is that fasting in this country has become very broken. And I think probably you all agree with me that the way we fast is quite problematic, and sometimes myself first, I lose sight of everything that I'm trying to do. You know, like my wife's biggest complaint to me, I don't know how to cook, but I can clean. But my wife's biggest complaint is, she says to me, and I'm also very indecisive, so that's a big problem. She says to me, "What do you want to eat?" I said, "I don't know, whatever." She said, "You know, well, you know, tell me what you want." I go, "I don't know what I want. I actually can never tell you what I want to eat. I have no idea. Right now, tell me what I want to eat. I don't know what I want to eat right now. I don't want to eat, but I don't know what I want to eat." So it's a big problem. And during the fast, she gets so annoyed. Just tell me what you want. I go, "I don't know what I want. Just give me options and I can pick." And we have this big drama about what I want to eat and what we're going to eat about the fast, because she can't cook. It's not easy to make food. And so there's this big process in the house about eating and food. And then it's like, well, you know, I'm just going to slip in some of this. I'll make you a nice macaroni keda, and I'm just going to slip in, you know, just some of that plant-based mince, which when you mix it in there with that, with all that, you know, we say fasting cheese, but actually, who's even counting? We're just mixing it in, and then you put that plant-based mince, and actually what you've got is really a delectable meal. You know, somebody the other day, I went to their house, they said, "I'll make you," like I went over and they one of my friends' houses said, "I'll make you some burgers." So I said, "Okay, sweet, no problem." I thought it was a vegan burger. I thought I was going to get a veggie patty. I hate veggie burgers. They're disgusting, I can't eat them. She came out with this burger that I have never the like had, and I immediately called my confession father and repented in tears. It's this impossible meat patty that was impossibly good. It was it dripped like meat, and I'm like, at some point I feel bad, like this isn't what we're here for, surely. And I think that we are in danger of really losing the whole purpose of everything that we do. We're really in danger of missing the point completely. It's not my fault, it's not your fault, it's society's fault, it's context. In this country, things are different. Somebody was telling me the other day, they go, in Egypt it was easier. They had meat like once a week back in the day, like when they first started fasting, you know, like 2,000 years ago. They probably had meat once a week or once a month. And so if it falls on Lent, they go, "We're going to give up that meat this once a month." And so they don't eat meat because they're eating plant-based food all the time anyway. And so the rules then seem to work. Now it's just so difficult. Like, we eat meat every day. Like, that's a standard part of our diet, and you don't eat meat. Then we go to the other, you know, food group, the carbs. And then everyone's complaining because carbs don't give you any energy. They're just full of calories, and they make you feel bloated. And it's just all a big disaster. So I suppose the point is, let's just stop fasting altogether. I think that maybe we need a rethink. Maybe we really need a rethink about fasting. Maybe you are really good. I'm just speaking from my own personal experience. I'm particularly bad. I'm speaking from my own personal experience. That maybe I need a rethink in the way that I fast. Because the talk that I was given today was fasting beats the odds. And quite frankly, when I was downing that impossible burger the other day, I thought to myself, I'm not beating any odds. How can this beat any odds? This is delicious. I'm enjoying myself thoroughly. And actually, during the fast, sometimes I get excited, especially Christmas fast time. Christmas fast time comes, you're like, "Oh, I haven't had seafood for ages." And you know, once when I first got married, me and my wife, we'd go to like Cronides, and we'd call it the Apostle Fast Special. And we'd go there, we'd get like a four cheese pizza, you know, those quattro formaggi, you know, the good one, and a seafood, like spadina, like a seafood stick, and we would have the meal of our lives. And we go, this is an Apostle's Fast Special. And the more and more I reflect on how retarded I am, the more I realize that something has to change. I cannot possibly fast this way. You know, take any Egyptian to any restaurant during a non-fasting meal, if they order seafood, you get the dirtiest looks. Like, I order seafood, if ever I want to order seafood, I don't. I don't do it because I'm just getting dirty looks. You never like, what are you doing? It's not fasting. I go, all right, but I feel like some barramundi. But you're not allowed to, because it's sinful to eat fish when you're not fasting. It's sinful. So then everyone's like, oh, man, because they're saving it. So when Christmas time comes, oh, mate, it's 40 days of seafood platters. Anyway, I digress. My point is that something is broken in this system. Something is broken, in my opinion. And for the vast majority of us, it doesn't work. For me personally, from the people I know, the people who I speak with, my friends, my family, there's something broken in the system. And I think that we have to try and fix it somehow. How? I don't know. But I think it goes, and I'm actually glad that I was asked to do this talk, because reflecting on the book of Daniel and reflecting on the fasting that's portrayed in there, I think it can really teach us a lot about what fasting is meant to be, what fasting actually is. Because if your diet is just vegan and you're not praying, nothing else is changing, I'm just vegan, even if, and this is the other thing, sometimes, you know, you abstain till ungodly hours, look how righteous I am, I'm not eating till 5 p.m. and then because you're so hungry, you just wolf down food as soon as you get it in front of you because you're starving. Is this a fast? That's an Islamic fast, actually. You wake up early in the morning before sunset, before sunrise, smash food, wait till the end of the day, and you smash it again. That's an Islamic fast. Sometimes we fast that way, even when we abstain for long hours. Our fasting is broken, it's twisted. It doesn't make any sense. It cannot be the fast that God is calling us to do, in my opinion. So, I think that when we think about fasting, you cannot focus on the food in front of you. You cannot focus on the ingredients and all of this. This cannot be the fast that beats the odds. It cannot be this fast. So let's look up Daniel. All of you have the Bible on your phone. So look up Daniel. I'm not going to read. I'm just going to pick out some highlights. I'm not going to go through the whole book. I couldn't, it's very long, but we'll just pick out some highlights. So this is, you know, and this is a fan favorite, this one, that, you know, everyone knows the story of Daniel, how they got them, him and his three friends, and they took him to Babylon, and then they put out the delicacies. Now, the problem with the delicacies was that they had been offered to idols, so they were polluted in some way. And so Daniel and his friends said, look, we're not eating it. But then the eunuch who was looking after him said, well, hang on a second, be careful, because they're going to kill me if you guys don't look good. So then they... So let's read a little bit. So from verse 11. Please test your servants for 10 days. Sorry, verse 12. Please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this manner and tested them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they wanted to bring and gave them vegetables. So one way of interpreting this is when you fast, you'll be healthier. Actually, my experience of fasting is I'm always terribly unhealthy. My gastrointestinal system is a mess during the fast, and it's tip-top normal times, but during the fast, it's a mess. And actually, the experience of all the saints who fasted properly is their health suffered. The heavy saints, their health suffered. So what are we talking about here? Is it a fast to make us healthy? Is it a fast to make us stronger, to give our body what it needs, to go back to our plant-based diet in which is natural and organic? Is that the purpose of fasting? actually most people who fast properly, the ascetic fathers who teach us about fasting, teach us that it actually makes you a lot more unhealthy. It's hard on your body. They eat actually only certain types of food. So the point of this is that this is related to the Old Testament. This is related to physical concerns in the Old Testament. But how do we understand this? That if you fast properly, you will not be physically more healthy. Probably not. But if you fast properly, your appearance will alter. Not your physical appearance, but your spiritual appearance. Everything about your spirit is brighter, is fresher. When you see someone who is very holy, who is fasting, they shouldn't be downcast and gloomy and miserable, even though they're skinny and malnourished. But actually, they should be glowing. They should be on fire with the spirit. Their body should be skinny and melting away. But their spirit should be fat and healthy. Their spirit should be alive, overflowing with joy. I speak for myself when I say, when I talk about fasting, it's never really with this overflowing joy. It's like, oh, here we go again. You know, but is that a problem with my fast? Absolutely. I should be overjoyed in the fast. Why? Because this is a time of rejuvenation. This is a time of renewal. This is a time of retreat. It's a time of growth. And we're too busy worrying about what we're going to eat, how I'm going to whip up this meal, what am I going to have when I break my fast at 3 p.m. This is what we're thinking about. And this is, I think, part of the problem. So when we read this, this is telling us that, no, I don't believe this is telling us that your physical appearance will be healthy. I think it's that it's your spiritual appearance that will grow. Everything about your spirit will grow if you do it right. Now let's keep going. So just to backtrack, if we talk about fasting without prayer, then it's nothing. It's a diet. There's no such thing as fasting without prayer. Christ never says anything. He says fasting and prayer. This kind comes out by nothing but fasting and prayer. So when we talk about fasting, you cannot take away from it. It's a joining word, which is prayer. You cannot. If you do, and if you are fasting without prayer, keep fasting and hopefully your prayer will come up. But know that in this particular fast, you are not benefiting. This is a vegan diet. If you're lucky, probably vegetarian, let's be real. It's a vegan or vegetarian diet and nothing more. You might lose a bit of weight. Good. You might put on weight because you're smashing carbs. But either way, it is merely a change in what you're eating, if you are not praying to the same level. So let's move on. So Daniel then... I've just got to find out, I didn't write down the thing. So what happened was, the King Nebuchadnezzar had some bad dreams. And he decided that no one could understand this in chapter 2. No one could tell him his dreams. So he said, I'm going to kill all the wise men. And they came to kill Daniel and his companions. Then Daniel went to his house when he heard this and made the decision known to his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. This is a fast. These guys didn't just decide they don't want to eat the king's food. These guys lived and breathed God. What's happening up there? Is that the English church?
Yeah.
Mate, things are happening up there.
I'm just walking up there. It's very creepy. Ah,
okay.
It's a very creepy old room. Yeah.
Okay. All good. The secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Why was the secret revealed to Daniel in a night vision? Because he fasted right. Because his fasting was accompanied by prayer, by sitting with God long hours in the night time. And that's when it came to him. It didn't come to him while he was sleeping. It came to him in a night vision, while he was awake, while he was sitting with God, while he was meditating on God, while he was thinking of him. That's when the vision came to him. It didn't come to Daniel just because he changed his diet. It came to Daniel because this is what he cared about, to be with God and to spend time with God. And so for us, this is the point. This is the point. That if you are not spending all your time thinking about how I'm going to be with God, spending time with Him, dedicating set time of my day to sit with Him, what is the point of your fast? What is the point? It cannot be just for the food. But Daniel shows us that actually a real fast, a proper fast, is one in which they fast from evil food, from food that destroys, in which they deny what they want, young men seeing the delicacies, denying themselves. And why? Because they prefer God. Because God is more beautiful to them than the food. And God is more beautiful to them than sleep. So this is the reason we fast. Because basically our body is, the needs of our body is so basic. What do we need more than anything? Food and sleep. And so when we fast, we're saying to God, fast and pray. Because remember, you can't fast without prayer. When we fast, we say to God, you are my food. You are my most basic need. And when we stand up and spend long hours with Him, denying our bodies sleep and rest to be with Him, we're saying, you are much more basic to my needs than food and sleep. That's why fasting and prayer is the most powerful thing, because they're the two most basic human needs. And by giving them up for God, then I'm replacing the very core of my being, the very root of what it means to be a human and to need things. I'm replacing that with God. Of course, I still have those things and I still do them, but I'm telling to God, you are much more important than any of these basic things that I need. So, let's keep going. So, the point that I wanted to make there was that the reason why this fast was acceptable is because God was their everything. He was everything to them. And that's why fasting came so naturally to them. Because God was in front of them and God was much more beautiful than anything around them. And this is why fasting was so beautiful. Let's move on. Another point that I wanted to make there before we move on was that when we fast a proper fast, which is to long for God and to neglect the body, when we do a proper fast that way, then it is a right fast. But when we fast the way that myself, full confession, fasts, we are doing the opposite. When I fast and say, how can I find a loophole here, we've got this planned base, we'll slip that one in there, it's fine. And when I think that is actually a fast, then what I'm doing is I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying, look how much importance I'm placing on the food. I'm going through ingredients and figuring things out. It's all right, it's good. I'm going through ingredients to look at how much importance I'm placing on the food. Isn't that the opposite of what these guys, what we're saying? That we're replacing our most basic need with God, but actually no, what we're doing is we're making even more time spent on food, more thought processes spent on food. How can this be the fast that God has called us to? So that's what the point is, that when we look for loopholes, when we do the fast the way we've done it, we actually are doing the opposite. Okay, so let's just keep going to the next one. So this is in chapter 3. And this is why I love this passage here. So the three young men, they refuse to worship. And so they're thrown in the fiery furnace. But before they're thrown in, I'll just read from verse 17. Oh no, verse 16. I love this is one of the most beautiful answers you'll ever hear in the Bible. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this manner about worshipping your gods. I'm not going to answer you. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. The reason why I love this is because we're going to be delivered from your hands. But if we're not, because that might be what God decides, I'm still never going to serve your gods. Whatever happens to us, we will never serve your gods. The reason why I picked out this thing is because it goes to what I was saying, that when we, that the purpose of fasting and prayer is to make us come to the point in our spiritual life where we realize that whatever happens to us is immaterial. The food is immaterial. Our life is, the sleep is immaterial. All the things that we want in life is immaterial. What is important is that God is with us and He will deliver me. And if He doesn't, I will die and I'll be with Him. Whatever happens to you in your life is immaterial because God is with you. This is the point of fasting and prayer, to bring us to that realization, to stand before God and say, God, get me out of this mess, but if not, I will never leave this place. God, solve this problem for me, but if not, I trust in you no matter what. Isn't that the purpose of fasting and prayer? That when we deny our bodies sleep and food and we say, I don't need these things, now I'm come to the realization that actually I don't need anything besides God. Nothing means anything. Nothing matters. Does that make sense? So I think that's why I picked that particular passage. And then the last one I will pick is when in chapter 6 with the famous lions, and they were jealous, so they tried to trap Daniel. And then it says, I'll just read from where it says, from the passage that I'm looking at. I think I've lost it. Oh yeah. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree that anyone who doesn't worship, they're dead. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before God, before his God, as was his custom since the early days. So why does Daniel beat the odds here with the lion? Why do the friends beat the odds in all of these ways? Why? Because this is his custom. From the beginning, from the early days, he is standing before God 3 times a day, denying himself sleep, denying himself rest, to stand before God every single day. How long he spent with God? Probably untold hours. But this is the fast that we are called to do. So, I think that having said all of this, besides probably turning you off fasting, which I hope I haven't done, I think that we can find some principles in maybe to make our fast a little bit better. Well, hang on. Maybe after all I've said, maybe you guys can help me in make my fast a little bit better. Any ideas about what principles we could come up with to make our fast better? Anyone? Help me. I'm struggling.
No nice veggie burgers.
Pardon?
No nice veggie burgers.
No nice veggie burgers. Yeah. What do we eat, though?
I think maybe get into the habit of not talking and preparing about food. Yeah. Maybe just, if you're hungry, you open the fridge door and you eat what's there.
Absolutely.
And then that's, you know, you don't, all that prep time is gone and all that fighting between your wife is over.
Sounds like a marriage counsellor. We need a lot of help. Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know what? The good thing about that one is it takes a lot of the thought process. What we are called to do in fast is think less about food. So what I suggest as a principle is this. And this is what I say to many people is fasting shouldn't be too hard. Fasting shouldn't be so hard that I just think about how hard it is all the time. And if I'm fasting till 3 p.m. and all I'm doing up until 3 p.m. is thinking about the food, I'd be upset if it's 2:47. You know, and all I'm thinking about the food, why? It's obviously, I've gone too far. It's too hard for me, so now I'm thinking about it too much. I've gone the wrong way. What I suggest is that have a look at your spiritual journey and your spiritual life. Where are you in your prayer life? If I'm just starting my prayer life, and people come to us all the time at St. Luke's who are not of a Coptic background, and I'll never let them do a full vegan fast. Never. It's too hard. I'll never say you do a full vegan fast because it's too intense for them at their stage in their spiritual journey. And even for myself, think about it. Where is my prayer life at the moment? If I'm just getting back into it, I'm just starting to pray again semi-regularly. I'm trying and I'm struggling. Don't slap on a full vegan fast on top of that and then abstain till 6 p.m. Your fasting doesn't match your spiritual life. And if your fasting doesn't match your spiritual life, there's either two ways it can go. Either I become completely arrogant and proud and go, look, I'm fasting till 6 p.m. What time do you finish? Oh, okay, good. Good to know. I won't tell him that I'm fasting till 6 p.m. And then I become arrogant and proud, which is far worse, which is much, much worse than anything else. Or it's miserable and I hate it. They're the two options. It cannot be any other. If my fasting does not match my spiritual life. So have a look at your spiritual life, where I'm at in my spiritual journey. Then sit down with your confession, Father, and say, listen, give me a program for fasting. And say, I don't want it to be too hard. Because the program for fasting, what happens is we look for loopholes. In the process of looking for loopholes, we now have, because the church in its wisdom sold the Siami cheese from the canteen. The problem with that is once we've introduced this concept, now what happens is, what difference does it make? Siami cheese is pretty delicious. I'm just going to have the bigger. And, you know, the mozzarella. It just happens. It's psychology, right? It's just natural. I mean, I feel like everyone's the same as me, but maybe it's just me. I don't know. But once you've put in Siami cheese, well, what's the difference between bigger and mozzarella? So then it slips in. And then now all of a sudden, I feel like I'm actually fasting. Like, yeah, I'm doing a pretty good fast. A vegetarian fast with some Nutella here and there. And it's a fast. But actually, what I should be doing is saying to my confession, Father, my spiritual life is this. I'm able to do a vegetarian fast. And then, under guidance, your spiritual father can say, okay, for your sake, because you're still struggling, do a vegetarian fast. And then I know in my mind, I'm weak. I know in my mind, this is a concession for me. This is the priest and the church and God condescending to my weakness, and I know I'm not doing it right, and there's room to grow. And when the time comes, when I'm praying more, and I'm loving the presence of God, and I want to give up more, I have room to grow into it. Does that make sense? So I think that way, rather than, you know, personalize your fasting with your confession, Father, the church has given us the rules, and those rules cover beginners through to saints. We don't have to all be doing the same thing. Maybe personalize it, and so it's not so hard for you. And then as you are increasing your spiritual life year on year, fast on fast, all of a sudden you want to fast more. I want to abstain for longer. I want to give up food. I'm not thinking about it as much, because now the fast is done coupled with prayer, and now it's perfect. Now it's working in sync, and it's giving me power, and now it's beating the odds. So that's just one practical way of fasting. Does anyone have any suggestions, any comments about that? That's just my personal opinion. You can tell I think about food and fasting a lot.
This is a question more than anything. I just wonder why the church, after 2,000 years of doing this, does not believe, but why is it that we cannot achieve the same goal at the end of the fasting period as with the non-fasting period? Like you know, understand what I'm saying? So we've got a goal. The church wants us to achieve this goal at the end of the fast. More time with God, you know, the increase in our spiritual life, you know, fellowship and communion with Christ, and what have you, the whole thing. Why is it not possible to achieve that goal when you're eating meat and chicken and eggs? Why not?
I think it is. The fasting is the way we're doing it that is problematic, because it's like, oh, it's so painful, oh, you're struggling, you're miserable, and then, oh, Easter comes. Oh, tell me anyone who's standing up to pray on Easter night. No one. They smash, oh, and they're just eating, you're just so happy. You've given yourself mugs and you're going to vomit because you've just, we do it to ourselves. But if the fast was done right, was done with moderation in conjunction with my spiritual life, it increases with the intensity, and actually as the Lent goes, I'm spending longer hours in prayer and enjoying it and discovering how much more beautiful God is than the food. That will never change. Once Easter comes, it'll just increase more, and each Lent will be another push to go further, and it pushes up pushes us higher. And when the Easter time comes, our spiritual life is still on fire. But then I need another Lent to get me even closer to the heart of God, even closer and further. And each subsequent Lent takes us there. But we have to do it right. The problem is our brains are broken in this country from fasting. And I actually believe that. You know, and I think that we've lost a bit, but I don't think that you can't achieve it. The problem is because it's so hard, we get to Easter and we're like, collapse, and Passion Week, woof, been there, good fight, and then we collapse. We don't pray for a month. What a travesty. It's a tragedy.
That's the point I'm trying to make. I always wondered, why did the church ever stop fasting? Mm. Why not fast all the time?
Yeah, just don't say those opinions too.
The reason is because we lose everything during that 50 days. Thing is gone in the 50 days.
It shouldn't be. We are doing it wrong. It's not that we should lose it. I believe that we're doing it wrong, in my opinion. And that's why I think that if you couple your fasting with... And the reality is, how many of us are praying intensely every day? How many of us are longing for God with all of our heart? If we're not doing that, then fasting is always going to be a bit burdensome to us. Do you know what I mean? And even if we are doing it, it's still a bit burdensome, but the burden is sweet, the burden is light, the burden is beautiful and enjoyable. So think on yourself. If you are not longing for God and searching and hungry and daily like looking for Him, then you haven't done fasting properly. Don't judge the fast. It's my fault. I haven't done the fast properly. Fasting is good. Fasting is the best. Fasting works. Fasting wins. Fasting beats the odds. But I have to do it properly. Any questions?
Can I ask a question for, you know, those of us who maybe feel content with our relationship with God? Maybe it's like not a, like maybe it's like not a reality, but that's how we feel and we don't fast.
Mm.
What would you say to those?
I think that anyone who feels content, I mean, this is just my opinion, just off topic, I think anyone who feels content in their relationship with God, we've got a problem, because that's not the model of Christian journey. It's I'm content, but always longing for Him. And all the saints who have charted the course for us say the same thing, that when you feel the grace of God, it's the greatest thing in the world, but it withdraws to draw us on, to take us further. And then I feel emptiness, and I'm hungry, and I try harder, and I do more, and I fast harder, and I spend more time. I give up more sleep, more food, to taste it again. And so that no one could ever be fully content,
right,
you know, with their spiritual journey, because they're always in this process of chasing and hungering and longing in a fully satisfied way.
Mm.
Paradoxically, it doesn't make any sense. But this is the way that the saints have charted the course for us. So anyone who says, oh yeah, I'm pretty good with my relationship with God. Yeah, I'm pretty happy. I don't need to fast. Confess why I'm pretty good. This is very problematic. That person is very far from the heart of God in that way. And anyone who thinks that they don't need to fast or confess or do the basic things that the church has told us to do, this is also a very dangerous form of pride. I'm setting up myself as if I know better than the church. This is self-imposed religion. So I think that that's a bit problematic. So I think everyone needs to fast. Everyone. We just have to maybe do it a bit differently than we've always done it. Maybe in the right way. I'll just finish up. Finishing time. Just finish up quickly. So just because I've got to pay lip service to the topic, they said fasting beats the odds. I haven't really said anything about that. So what odds are we trying to beat? And this is what I'm talking about. If you fast properly, which is a fast that is coupled with intense prayer, then what odds are we trying to beat? Let's say sin. Okay? I've been struggling against the same sin for many, many years and battling for many, many years. How does fasting beat the odds of that sin? Well, I'll tell you. If you are fasting and saying, God, I love you more than the food, and the food is the least important thing on my mind because I'm hungering for the food of prayer and for the food of the Word of God, then you've already defeated the sin. The odds are already beaten. There is no sin in your life. Of course, there's mistakes, but the definition of sin is missing the mark. And if I fall into this same sin over and over again, But I repent every single time. How have I missed the mark? I haven't missed the mark. I've hit the mark right on the head, because that's all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But I repented. So that's not sin in strictest sense, because I haven't missed the mark. I'm praying intensely. I love God more than anything. I'm fasting. But he's allowed this sin to be in me to give me a spirit of humility, a spirit of repentance. Then I haven't missed the mark. The odds are already beaten. The sin is already defeated in my life. It's just on its way to die. It's been robbed of oxygen. It's been robbed of life. It's like a plant you put in a house. It's going to wither away and die on its own, in God's own time. So long as I am fasting and praying the right way, which is denying my body the food because I love God more, because I want him more, I'm longing for him more, then the sin is already dead in my life. What other things? For others, you know, when I'm praying for other people to have deliverance, who, when they know the heart of God, and who, when they're praying intensely for someone and longing for the salvation of another human being, does not know with certainty that that person is saved? We have to know that if we are fasting and we know the heart of God, that he doesn't desire the death of a sinner, but that all should return and live, if we know that's the heart of God, then if I'm fasting and praying intensely for another person, they will be saved. You have to have that confidence. Why not? Why? And you see it all the time. Many people, no matter what happens, no matter what, sometimes towards the end of someone's life who had a very difficult life, they die, the person who lives on, who was praying intensively for that person, says, I know they were saved. How do you know? Because I know God. I know that God, he made it work in the end. In the last moment of their life, they flipped the switch like the right thief, and they were saved. So the odds are beaten already. If you believe and you're praying intensely for someone, know that God will save them somehow. Because I know God, and I'm long, and I love him. And when he sees a child asking for their sibling, how can he not act? And if you know the heart of God, then those odds are already beaten. And the last thing, okay, odds like this. I'm going for a job interview and I'm fasting and praying. Will I get the job interview? How do I know? Maybe, maybe not. Does God going to give it to you? Maybe, maybe not. The point is that the fasting and prayer that I'm talking about, which is to long for God above all and everything, which is the true fasting and prayer, it's already beaten that off. Because if you don't get the job interview, the Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. If you don't have this outcome, you know best, God. And if you approach God with the spirit of loving him, and like we said, to long for his presence and to long for him and him alone, then you've already beaten the odds in your life. Because whatever comes from his hands is good. Because you know that no matter what happens in my life, I can go into my room at night and I can taste of the glory of God. What else in this world can compare to that? Can money compare to that? Absolutely not. Any saint wouldn't give up billions and all the money in the world to lose 0.1% of God. That's what the saints say. They wouldn't give up all the money in the world, every single thing in the world, to lose 0.1% of the grace of God. So then, of course, the odds are already beaten, because you have everything you need in your room in the presence of God. That's, you have everything. So doesn't mean I'll be successful and have lots of money. Probably, maybe, maybe not. There are plenty of people who fast and pray and are not successful and don't have lots of money and don't have things that, you know, we would think that they should have. We don't preach a prosperity gospel that if you come to God, you will be successful and have all of these things. Naturally, if you're a hard worker, you'll be successful. Okay, but maybe you won't. Maybe God allows things to happen. We don't know. All I'm saying is, when it comes to material things, when you fast and pray this way, you've already beaten the odds because you don't need them anymore. Because you've got what you've come looking for, which is God. You don't need food and sleep. So why on earth do you need a house? Why on earth do you need money? Why on earth do you need a nice car? I'm not telling you not to have these things. By all means, have them. But if you fast and pray this way, then those things, even if you have them, will mean very little to you. And even if you have them, you'll lose them. And the thought of losing them will be like, who cares? Doesn't make any sense. So I think that is the fasting and prayer that we should really attain to. just as a principle for myself, I'm going to work on with you guys together, is to stop loopholes, to stop all of these things. Fast in moderation under guidance, and focus more on your prayer. Focus more on your time spent with God, because everything grows from that. Any questions?
This talk was brought to you by Upper Room Media. We hope that this talk has, through the grace of God, touched your heart, and we pray that it will not only inform you, but will also transform you and your life with Christ.